the first three verses, it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Considered him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that, what? You will not grow weary and lose heart. Hey, everybody has their own race. That's one of the best sermons Sonny's had. I've heard it several times, little different variations over the years, but it has helped me. Everybody's got their own race. You got yours, I got mine. We all have stuff. We all have stuff to deal with. But I'm just trying to enlighten you a little bit this morning. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. We got to get our arms around that. And it says here, just so we won't grow weary and lose heart. Why? So we can run the marathon. Second point. Excuse me, they don't even have podiums anymore. You know, I got to set my water on the floor. Point number two. Carry the water till it turns to wine. I'm not going to read all this because here's the other thing. Robert and I had a talk this week. You know, back 12 years ago when I was still in ministry, 30 minutes, I was just getting going. It was just a little past the introduction. Now Sonny and Will, they've all set the standard. I got 30 minutes. It's printed out on a sheet. I'm not going to read all these scriptures. There'll be a good quiet time, but in John chapter 2, first 11 verses, this was Jesus' first miracle, where he turned the water to wine at the wedding. You know the story. You can go back and read it. What I like to do when I read the Bible, and it's helped me over the years, is I try to visualize it like a movie, or try to think of it in terms of dialogue, because, you know, the scriptures pretty much just tell you what's there. They don't fill in all the blanks. And I think this is all right. If what I'm saying is not all right, the elders can straighten me out afterwards. But anyway, I like to visualize it. I like to get it in my mind what they're doing. Otherwise, if it's just he said this, he said that, me, I have a characterization of the guys in the Bible that they're just like automatons, you know. Right. It's more than that. They have relationships. They were there. So try to think about this. A lot of the scholars and commentators think Jesus was probably at a wedding of some of his relatives. Maybe distant, and they probably weren't real rich. Because anyway, they ran out of wine. But you know the story. Jesus' mother Mary came up to him and said, they have no more wine. And Jesus looked at her and he said, hey, why are you involving me in this? My time has not yet come. But Mary, being like most mothers, reminds me of my mother and James' mother. While Jesus is saying that, she turns to the servant and said, do whatever he says. You know, it's like Jane's mom. Always had this big spread of food, your stuff. And she said, here, you want some more of this? And I'm like, no, I'm full. Bam. It's already there. Mary's like, do whatever he says. Jesus is telling her, I ain't doing nothing. It's not my time yet. She said, do whatever he says. So Jesus looks at the servants, and he says, fill these water pots with water. And voila, there you have it, wine. The best wine, as they said. But now, have you ever really thought about this or researched it? These pots held 20 to 30 gallons of water. Scripture says that. That's not footnote. It's in there. You know how much water that is? You ever carried a 5-gallon bucket of anything? In visualizing sort of a movie, a dramatic scene like that, I'm thinking like, I wonder what these servants thought. Like Jesus said, fill these pots with water. You know, you got to think about these boys. They got to haul some water up there and either pour them in or carry these huge things. What do you think they thought? What do you think they felt? More likely, number one, they didn't understand. It's like, this is a wedding. Everybody's had enough water. What's up here? Probably they didn't want to do it. This is a wedding. I know I'm a servant, but I'm dancing right now. You know, they probably thought it was wrong. It's like, we're well into this thing. It's not part of my job. Probably thought it was unfair. You know, I shouldn't have to do this. It's not my fault. They ran out of wine. And what does water have to do with wine? But look at the results. See, it's a marathon. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know where it's going. But what we've got to do, like these servants, we got to carry the water till it turns into wine. We got to keep doing it. God knows what he's doing. He can do great things in spite of circumstances. And I know this is not a life-changing circumstance, except for the bride and groom's parents who ran out of wine and were going to be embarrassed by everybody. But we've got to stay after it. Oh, my man. Thank you. I appreciate it. We got a great church, don't we? I love the Athens church. But here's the deal. You know, this has become a little bit of a sort of a mind-selling phrase for me. When stuff happens that I just don't expect, don't necessarily like, when things aren't going to, you know, I sort of tell myself, keep toting the water till it turns into wine. There's something out there. So that's point two. Point three, we got, because this is a marathon, we've got to stay faithful to the end. All the way to the finish. A marathon's 26 miles. Has anybody in here ever run a marathon? Oh, my goodness. I'm impressed. I have not. Will not. Cannot. Should not. But that is impressive. A marathon's 26 miles. Not going to do you any good. You're not going to get a t-shirt. You're not going to get a medal if you run 25 and stop. It's the same for us. Whether we're starting out in our Christian life in college or whether you're old and gray like some people in the audience, if we don't make it all the way, we're not going to get the prize. The Bible is replete. It is full of examples of great characters who did not lead charmed lives, who endured all kinds of difficult life situations, but who stayed faithful to God and to the race that he had laid out for them without giving up, without fainting, without backing down, as Ed sang. They just kept after it. What we got to do is we got to read our Bibles. Because I think to a certain extent, and you know, maybe I'm just preaching to myself, but our society is to a point where we expect everything to go our way. It's not in the Bible. It's not in life. It just doesn't roll that way. And all these guys I'm talking about, the characters in the Bible, and you can read, they are our examples. They are the great cloud of witnesses that's cheering us on. And remember, it's not how you start. It's how you finish. It's how you get to the end. I want to make it to the end. I want to finish strong. Let's look at a couple of these guys. You know, Sonny did a great job of talking about Joseph just last month. One of my favorite Bible characters. I mean, Joseph was a cool guy. But how long did he suffer all these incredible things? It seemed like everything he touched for 40 years turned to poo. I mean, you know, he's in jail, he's out of jail, he makes a friend, he comes, you know, it just never. But what? It's a marathon. He stayed faithful. God blessed him. Moses, we always want to remember the great victories of Moses. Charlton Heston in the movie, all that stuff. But he was wandered 40 years in the desert with some of the most ungrateful folks in the world. But he showed up on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus. That's pretty slick. That works. Joshua, Caleb, same thing. They were the two spies that brought the good report. They were the only guys in that original 2-3 million, how many, Ron, band of Israelites that got to go into the promised land. God waited until all the rest of them died and had children. Their children got to go in. But 40 years. You know, that's incredible. Elijah, he's maybe the most famous of the prophets. Certainly, I think the most dynamic and exciting. Great victory. He destroyed the idols and the prophets of Baal. Big, big victory. Shows up on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus and Moses. Appears to Peter, James, and John. I mean, pretty good stuff, but long time, hard life. Abraham, he's the father of the faithful. He's even referred to as a friend of God. I always thought that's cool. I hope who's ever on the gate when I get there said, Clyde, he's a friend of God. Let him in. But it says Abraham was a friend of God. God gave him a great promise when he was a young man. And the promise came to be. It was Isaac. That, you know, all the earth would be blessed from it. Ultimately, Jesus would come from that. Of course, Abraham didn't know it. But my goodness, he waited years. He endured everything. He was an old, old man when that happened. It's a marathon. We got to stay faithful to the end. We got to push. And then a few months ago, Sonny did a lesson or two on Job. That's probably the quintessential classic example of staying faithful. Here's a rich man that lost everything, literally everything, not just his wealth. He lost his family, all of his children. I could go on and on, but this is really the story of the Bible. And it's like, I hope you're not sitting there saying, man, this is really negative. It's not really negative. This is reality. This is the way it is. The positive part of it is God will help us. God will lead us. God will change us. God will get us to the finish line. Friday, one thing, we don't give up. No matter how much we feel like it or how much we want to give up, we can't give up. And most of us out there are saying either in your mind, you're saying, oh, I'd never give up. But here's the deal. If you have stopped doing the things you know to do, if you stop reading your Bible and praying and sharing your faith and your life with people and stop dealing with sin in your life, you have, in fact, already given up. That's not what God's looking for. God's looking for faith. And faith won't allow us to do that. And you say, but I'm coming to church. That's a whole different deal. That is not about staying faithful. That's not about making it to the end. That's just about coming to church. It's about us being faithful to God and not giving up. We got to be faithful to the end. Fourth and last point. We got to accept the fact. And this is a hard one. You know, I think this is hard to deal with for everybody. But we got to accept the fact and the reality that I am damaged goods. I am damaged good. So if you go back to what I was sharing about when the church started and all of that, whatever my subconscious thought process was that had me thinking, you know, I'm doing good. I'm going to work hard for the Lord. I'm going to deal with sin in my life. I'm going to charge right on into heaven with all my friends. And honestly, I now realize that's what I really thought about. But that whole idea of doing all those things and charging right on into heaven with my friends changed pretty dramatically for me when I lost my son, Spencer. Like, you knew him at 30 years of age of cancer. Like, I've been in a ministry for a long time. 13, 14 years at that time. And I think intellectually and even spiritually, I think, I understood that I did not and do not know what God's doing. You know, I don't know. That's above my pay grade. I don't have a right to know. And you know, I think growing up in a traditional church and then being in the ministry and all, I held on to Romans 8:28. It's like, I love God. He's going to work good out of this. Can't see it. Don't understand it. Probably couldn't understand it if it was explained to me, but, you know, I had it. But let me tell you something. Emotionally, it was a different story. I had to come to grips with a lot of things in my life. I think one of the first ones was I had to come to grips with, instead of, why me, God, why is this happening? Things were going so well, to why not me? You know, all these guys I've just been talking about, man, they had stuff. They had stuff in their lives. So I think I had to try to come to grips with that. Understand, I'm not fixed. I'm damaged goods. I'm not sharing this with you because I got it all figured out and I'm there. No, far from it. I'm sharing it with you so no matter what falls in front of you, you say, I'm going to be faithful to the end. I'm going to be strong. I'm going to get through this with God's help. Amen. Second thing I think I had to come to grips with was my own faith. Was I going to continue believing all the things that I had learned and that I had preached and that I had taught about God? Was I going to hold on to all that? Or was I going to allow this one tragic incident, to knock all that down? That's not an easy thing to grapple with sometimes. I think another thing I had to come to grips with was just realizing that God's not looking for perfection in me. So, you know, I'm a multifaceted person in terms of careers and all. I majored in accounting. I was a CFO for a real estate company for a long time. Accountants like debits and credits to equal, you know, no pennies left over, all that stuff. This was hard for me to realize that God was not looking for perfection in me. He was looking for faith. That's all he's looking for. And I think there are many things, but I think the last big thing I had to come to grips with was realizing that I don't have to be fixed to be right with God. Because like I just told you, I'm not fixed. I am damaged goods. And honestly, confession, whatever you want to call it, I don't think I'll ever be fixed. I'm never going to be like I was before Spencer died. And, you know, that is just a fact. And but because of that, reason I'm sharing that with you is because I think for a long time I felt somewhat estranged from God because I didn't feel like I felt when we were rocking and rolling and baptizing people and things were going great and on and on and on. But that's a feeling. That's not a reality. I don't have to be fixed, and I think you understand what I mean by fixed, to be right with God. And what it did, it forced me to restudy a lot of things. I'd always been big on, you know, character studies and preaching about the characters in the Bible because I loved them. So I started restudying some of those things through all of this process here. One of the first ones was Caleb. I love Caleb. He's always been one of my favorite guys in the Bible. I mentioned him a minute ago. You know, so much so that Genevieve, our youngest, if she had been a boy, she would have been named Caleb. I mean, I was into Caleb. I thought he was great. I preached about Caleb. Probably one of the best sermons I had was all about Caleb and about being fired up when you get old. And I was all of about 40 then. But I was preaching it. It was great. And the story's over in Joshua 14. Great story. Not going to read it. Yeah, I'm not really not going to read it. I'm hurrying. This is the last point, though. I told you, see. I only told you that to encourage you. No, it is the last point. You got to read it. Caleb was 85. They had wandered through the promised land all this time. They were finally in there. Joshua was dividing up the land, the promised land. It was a big deal. Now, Caleb, you know, he and Joshua, they were the oldest guys in the crowd. Because God let everybody else die out so he could take their children into the promised land. He's 85. Rather than take the little cushy spot down by the Jordan River, Caleb sort of gives it one of these and say, no, I want the mountain land up there where the Anakites are. Their cities are fortified. They were even rumored to be giants, all in all. And I thought, man, that's tough. That's my guy right there, 85 years old, and he's taking names and kicking behinds. I always said, I'm going to be like Caleb. He's my man. Well, you know what I realized? That's why Caleb's in the Bible and I'm not. Things change from 46 to 60. I mean, you know, I'm like, I still love Caleb. I still think he's great. But, you know, I'm not Caleb. I'm Clyde. I'm trying to run my own race. And you know what? I told you I was restudying all these guys. This was not a good one to pick. Because it sort of, you know, contributed to my thinking that I got to be fixed to be a good Christian. I'm not like Caleb. I thought I better keep studying. So then you start looking, though, and I'm going to hit these quickly, but David, a man after God's own heart. Think about David. We think about David. When I think about David, we think about his great military victories. And, you know, David slayed his 10,000s and on, slayed Goliath. But I'm going to tell you what. David had a rough life. A lot of it self-inflicted, which this point, number four, I'm damaged goods. David was damaged goods. I'm not sure David ever got fixed after he killed Uriah, one of his mighty men, so he could have his wife, Bathsheba. I'm not sure David ever got fixed after his head army commander, Joab, killed one of his best friends, Abner. It's like, read it. He mourned before the whole country. I'm not sure he ever got fixed. And I'm pretty sure he never got fixed about Joab, again, killing his son Absalom. Dreadful stuff. And you're saying, well, David, you know, he was the great king. He was this and that. No, let me tell you about David. David was sensitive. David was an artist. He was a poet. He was a musician. Here again, you got to get a picture. You got to read between the lines. You think he just shrugged all that off? No. David was damaged goods. But he was a man after God's own heart. God blessed him. He made it. Psalm 73, a psalmist talks about this. He said, when my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. I was a brute beast. Yet I'm always with you. He's talking about always being with God. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterward, you take me into glory. That's what it's about. And, you know, go back and read that whole psalm. That whole psalm is about why are bad guys prospering and I'm getting my behind kicked every time I turn around. It is a great psalm. And it's so true. When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was senseless and ignorant. Hey, the first 6-8 weeks after Spencer died, I gained 15 pounds. You're like, wow, how'd you do that? I sat up every night eating ice cream, potato chips, and Sports Center. And every day I'd get up, I'm like, man, I tell Jane, I got to go to bed tonight. I can't do this. But couldn't sleep, didn't want to sleep. Ice cream, potato chips, Sports Center. Man, after about 6 or 8 weeks, I was looking for a 12-step program for ice cream and Sports Center. I mean, I was senseless. I was ignorant. But that's what grief and bitterness does to us. David was damaged goods, but he was God's man. That's what we got to be. Moses, damaged goods. He never got fixed. Moses was messed up to the end. He was great. He led the children out, but he was hot-headed. Killed an Egyptian while they were still in Egypt. He was insecure. He didn't want to be God's leader. He didn't get to go into the promised land after all of that. Why? Because God told him to speak to the rock. He struck it. He's damaged goods. But you know what? He made it to the Mount of Transfiguration. damaged goods. That's all I want. I just want to make it. I want to finish. I want to finish strong. Elijah's another one. I didn't say much about him. I was trying to trick you there. He was great. He did all this great stuff with the prophets of Baal and all of that. And then, man, he freaked out, ran away from Jezebel and Ahab like a scared little girl, tried to hide from God. Y'all think he was fixed? That's really sort of the last story we hear about Elijah. He turned it over to Elisha after that. Think he was fixed? No. But he was right with God. And you say, how do you know that? He was on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus. That's all I want. You know, that's all I want. I want to get there. Well, I about got there. I got to hurry up. I can go on. Jacob, God changed his name to Israel. You get the significance of that? The children of Israel, God's people. That's Jacob. You know what? Jacob never got fixed after losing Joseph. He thought Joseph was dead. He never got fixed. And you say, Clyde, how do you know that? Go back and read Genesis 44. Read the whole chapter, but verse 21, 22, verse 30 and 31, Judah is begging Joseph not to keep Benjamin. And why? Benjamin was Jacob's only son left by Rachel, with Rachel as his mom. And Judah says two or three times there, because if Benjamin has to come down here, we don't take him back, my father will die. What's the point? He never got fixed. You know, there's a famous lie out there. It's told all the time. Time heals all wounds. Does not. Sorry, does not. Jacob literally never got over losing Joseph. Never. He didn't want Benjamin out of his sight. That's all he had left. So you don't have to be fixed. You got to be faithful. That's what all these guys had in common. See, because here's the deal. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. But what about all the incredibly difficult things I'm dealing with in my marathon? Hey, a couple of scriptures here. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 16. It says, therefore, we do not lose heart, though outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles, see, they seem so big to us. They are big to us. You know, it's like puppy love. It's real to the puppy. It says, for our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. One of my favorite passages for years, I thought was a little backwards. It still was one of my favorite passages, but I thought Isaiah had it confused a little bit. Isaiah 40, verse 28 said, do you not know, have you not heard, the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary, and he increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Awesome passage. But I always thought, you know, Isaiah got a little confused there. It ought to be the other way around. You got to walk before you run and run before you fly. It should be walk, run, soar. See, and I think just me, I think I've done some soaring. God has blessed me. I've done some running. But I got to be honest, man. I am walking now because I'm damaged goods. But I'm not about to faint. I'm not about to back down. I'm headed for the finish line to get the crown and join the great cloud of witnesses that have gone before. Spencer, Joe Woods, Andy Van Buren, thousands of others. That's what I'm looking for. What about you? How are you going to finish? You can't coast along in non-commitment and unrepented, undealt with sin, with no faith in God who's brought us this far. He's brought us this far. He will take us all the way. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. God bless you.